Welcome back to the Orville Universe Podcast. Today we are talking about Orville Season 1, Episode 11, New Dimensions. We're talking about space-time. We're talking about the book Flatlands and two or three dimensions. And we're talking about whether it's a good idea to make a total idiot who happens to be a genius the head of your engineering department.
All that right after this. Welcome to the Orville Universe Podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
I'm Matthew S. Fox.
What's happening, Matthew S. Fox?
It's a good day. It's a good day. It's an Orville discussion day. I tend to have been really looking forward to these podcasts.
Yeah, same here. Same here. Sometimes I'm like, sometimes I'm questioning them, and then I'm like, and then every time after we do one, I'm like, that's so much fun. I just really enjoy these discussions. They just kind of mean a lot to me. I've really enjoyed doing them. Mm-hmm. I always question my podcast because I'm like, do I have time to do another podcast right now?
Yeah.
And then after doing, I'm like, oh yeah, it's what I really like doing.
No, I get that. And for anyone who's ever wondered why our release schedule tends to be a bit all over the map, both Matt and I have kind of crazy schedules. Myself especially, I'm traveling so much for magic that finding a day to record, and I always really appreciate how flexible you are in terms of finding the time. So,
well, yeah, I love that you have daytimes free because Every other podcast I do, everyone wants to do it at night, and that's the only time I have to spend with my girlfriend, who gets very frustrated with me when I schedule everything for the nighttime.
How can podcasters have those silly job things?
You know, I
understand,
right?
The podcast is I have employment, but like you, I don't have a regular 9-to-5 job, so most of my working time is at different times. So
yeah, same here.
But yeah, anyway, let's dive into this episode. You want to give a quick summary?
Sure, absolutely. The episode begins with Lamar and Malloy playing a prank on Yaphet, which they feed him to Bordas, which is pretty funny. And then they go on, after that whole thing is resolved, or sort of resolved, I guess, they go on to hit what they call a pothole in space, and they try to examine what's going on with the pothole, and in the course of that, Ed realizes finally that his job was given to him because Kelly stood up for him. And so that's really the thrust of the episode is, they realize that. And then while she's going over Lamar's record, she finds out he's a genius. And so the thrust of the episode is more is being after Lamar as a crew member because of his intelligence has been revealed. And, Ed is realizing that he did not get everything he has because of his own work. And so it's them trying to realize, you know, what they need to do going forward. And, that's the episode. They realize that the pothole they hit was two-dimensional space, which is pretty cool and interesting. They have to go through a doorway to two-dimensional space to hide from the Krill, and they have to use a shuttle to tow the ship because their ship will not work in two-dimensional space. So they put a bubble around the shuttle, they drive it through two-dimensional space, and are able to make it through. And that gives Lamar and Ed the confidence to kind of tackle their individual woes.
Right.
And that's the episode.
Yeah. So we got a couple of plot lines going on here. Let's first start with the I want to get to Lamar and the big things there, but let me just start with kind of what were your general thoughts of the episode?
I liked it. I liked it. It's got its issues, of course, and it's, you know, compared to it's kind of a middle of the road episode, I guess, for me, like from a qualitative perspective. It is there's more. It's a character building episode. I feel like the novel idea of two dimensional space is not the most groundbreaking thing, and they don't do much with it.
Yeah.
From a science fiction perspective, it's not very dense. It's like two-dimensional space. It looks like a video game. I don't know. It didn't seem like it was actually two-dimensional space. It's just them flying over a plane, which I guess that's what two-dimensional space would look like. I feel like they could have done something more imaginative with that. Like, what does two dimensions actually mean if you lose one of our three dimensions? I don't know. It was not bad, but it was sort of a simple idea, and that's all they really delved into. It was just like, let's use technobabble to make the shields work better.
Yeah, I definitely was very frustrated by that. Because, and I actually, they referenced the book Flatland at one point, which I love. I actually wrote a paper in seminary about that book.
Oh, neat.
Because one thing I'll quickly correct, the book is meant to be a parable of many things, but it's primarily a theological work. Cause it's supposed to be about the idea of how do we as beings who exist in our own dimensions contemplate a something like a God that exists in dimensions beyond our own. And there's all sorts of great stuff that it gets into of philosophy and theology and geometry and ethics and fairness and perception and all the stuff. And I would have loved if they gave us a whole episode about that. Putting that aside, though, I thought I had kind of a similar reaction to you. I said at the very beginning as we started talking about this show that what I want science fiction to do is to raise good questions. And I was thinking about this in terms of the show because I think the question that they raise, especially in terms of male pride and ego and mm-hmm. how do you balance individual success versus community support with the captain, I love the question they raised and I loved how they settled it. The question they raise in terms of Lamar, in terms of innate intelligence versus attitude and leadership and how you promote people, I completely disagreed with the answer they gave. I thought they were absolutely crazy to promote Lamar in the situation that they did. But again, I found that frustrating, but also I liked it in that way because it was like, okay, this is raising a good question. I disagree with the answer they're suggesting, but I like that they're raising the question and giving us something to discuss. Like, I feel like this episode, we still have much more to discuss than we did the last one. And to me, that makes this a, like I said, I think a middle-of-the-road episode.
Yeah, absolutely. This is clearly better than the last 2 weeks of kind of bad episodes. It's so funny. These kinds of shows, they pack their goodness on the beginning and the end, so there's always a lull in the middle. And we hit that lull over the last 2 weeks, and now it's kind of starting to climb back. And I think the last few will be good. Just based on my experience with television, and there's only I think two more for this season, so I think we're up for a large run of good episodes. I believe.
I think you're right.
But yeah, this episode for me, it, like I said, it wasn't very thick on the science fiction. It wasn't very thick on even the moral questions as much. They were trying to just make it a character building episode. But again, I think they did stumble into. I mean, I guess they didn't stumble because they talk about it. Lamar being promoted over Yoffit, I found offensive. For sure. Especially, it reminds me of this 2009 Star Trek where they promote Captain Kirk from like ensign to captain in 2 days or something like that. It's just like he keeps getting promoted because of events. You know, yeah, put him, realize he's smart, encourage him to take some initiative and try to like get on some sort of command track. I don't think that just making him a commander in that moment is probably the best thing.
Especially because it made me want to... Yeah, we can dive into this one first, then maybe talk about Mercer. It got me thinking about what is a leader? You know, this is something that I think about a lot because I have been kind of trained in community organizing and leadership and building up leaders and things like that. And those are issues really dear to my heart. And I think I... Like, in the Magic Judge world... There are people who I know who are the smartest people I have ever met in terms of magic rules and magic policy, and they can look at any two cards in magic and just immediately figure out how do they interact, what rule applies, in ways that just blow my mind with their sheer intelligence. Some of them also are fantastic leaders. Some of them would be horrible leaders, and I've seen be bad leaders, because... Leadership to me is about so much more than raw intelligence. Leadership is about your ability to motivate people, your ability to recognize the skills of others and to, you know, to point them in good directions, to assess a problem and be able to triage and to be able to say, okay, well, there are these three problems and we have to solve them all in the next 5 minutes, but realistically problem two, we're not probably going to get to, so let's focus on problem one and then do problem three if we can. There's so much that goes into it. And I feel like, you know, you kind of take it in a D&D situation. Lamar probably has an 18 intelligence. He still has like an 8 wisdom. You know, I kind of feel like, and maybe a 10 charisma. Remember, this is the same guy who not that long ago almost had his brain wiped because he couldn't get out of his own way in terms of this publicity tour. And granted, that whole world was broken, but still, you were cringing as you watched the things he did because you felt like, dude, do you just have any common sense whatsoever?
Yeah.
So I definitely thought this was the wrong idea. And I think it was one more of those things where they're trying to set up a particular story beat and they're just kind of clumsy in how they do it. Because I think the point that they were trying to get at was that there are people who get bullied for being too intelligent and so wind up needing to kind of hide their intelligence and take on this kind of role of class clown. And that is a great story to tell and one that probably a lot of sci-fi people can really identify with. But I thought this was not the way to tell it because to me the ending of that story shouldn't be, okay, you get promoted to be the head of everything.
Yeah, it should have been, to me, it should have been, we want you on in a command training program. We want you to start having responsibilities, not the next day you will be responsible for this investigation, and then if you do well, you're responsible for the entirety of engineering.
Right.
Yeah, it was a silly way to push that. And I agree with you. I think it's a great idea. I also think there's something a little... I mean, they touch on it in the episode. There's something, I feel like Kelly is making some choices for other people, which I mean, maybe that's part of her job. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not, forcing him into leadership. I do feel in some ways, like leadership is something you have to desire. Maybe not. I don't know. That's an interesting question. What do you think about that? What do you think? Do you think that it's important? Sometimes you think about like politicians and anyone who runs for president has to be a little bit crazy because they think they should be in charge of everything. In some ways, you ever see the show Designated Survivor?
I have not, but I've heard a lot about it.
I think it's really bad, but I think there's something very attractive about that show. And the point is, what if somebody who doesn't want power actually got it?
I mean, I'll give you another example of that same concept that's a little closer to the sci-fi world, Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's about someone who is the president of the colonies, is someone who, she wanted some degree of power, but she wanted power over her own small little world. You know, and I think, I think those are great stories to tell. But I think you're right. An essential part of it has to be that at some point in that kind of, it's the classic hero's journey story. Mm-hmm. Of a person is given this incredible responsibility, but on some level, they still have to affirmatively choose to take it.
Yeah, I think that's what bothered me. I think there's no agency in Lamar's storyline here, except for not letting them die, he's forced into a situation. I do think that for both storylines, the shuttle thing is kind of problematic. It's like Lamar didn't let them die, so that gives him the confidence to go on and be a leader. And then Ed, which we haven't really gotten into yet, has this other issue with being sort of toxically self-reliant. And he uses the shuttle ride. Somehow that convinces him to be less self-reliant, even though it was a pure action of like, even though I'm the captain, I'm going to go do the dangerous thing and not protect. I don't know. That was a weird climax for the two storylines to coalesce around.
Yeah, and let's definitely talk about the captain in a minute. I just want to
absolutely,
because I think you're making a really good point connecting the two. One of the moments with Lamar's story that bothered me the most was when I think both the captain and Kelly at different times shame him, because what he says is he just wants to come home, have a beer, and pass out. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not wild about the kind of alcoholism idea of drinking till you pass out, but I think ambition is generally a good thing, but can often be a very dangerous thing. But I think we make a huge mistake when we say that there's something wrong with wanting to just go about your life by having a job, doing it well, going home, enjoying yourself, waking up the next day and doing that. Like, I think there's an incredible amount of elitism that you often hear, because often that idea is directed towards like the more working class professions. You know, it's like, how can you be happy just being a plumber, just being a carpenter, just getting up, doing a job, going home, being done, instead of wanting to climb the corporate ladder in some way.
Yeah.
And I really didn't like that, because, you know, to me, if the story had been them saying, okay, if that is what you want to do, I understand, but I want you to know that here's a place where you're not going to get bullied for being intelligent. And if that isn't what you really want to do, and you want to do more, we want to help you know this is a safe space to do that.
Yeah.
And then he had kind of been like, yeah, maybe I'm not really happy just doing this every day and coming home. I want to do more. That would have been a great way to tell the story.
I would like him used his intelligence to be like, no, I'm not going to be chief engineer. That's dumb. Yeah. I would like to use my intelligence to say, you're right. I'm going to do it properly and learn to be a commander and enter some sort of training program. Maybe he becomes Yoffit's right-hand man for a while,
yes,
or something like that. That would have been great, because Yoffit, maybe he becomes, you know, sort of subservient to Yoffit. There's two points in here that I think, like, could have made this work a little better.
Uh-huh.
There's one point where Isaac looks at Lamar when he defends Yoffit. You know what I'm talking about? It was Yoffit's idea, and he and Yoffit yells at his crew, and it's supposed to be a moment of you realizing maybe he could be a good commander. Even though he's kind of lashing out emotionally, he's also defending his subordinate. He's taking responsibility. Like, that is a good commander action. He should take responsibility, and he should defend and make sure his subordinates aren't sniping at each other. That was a really great moment, but then that went nowhere. Like, I wanted Isaac to maybe go tell Kelly about that, or maybe Isaac talk to Lamar about that. Like, I saw what you did there. I've seen good commanders are ones that, you know, take care of their people or whatever. Like,
right.
But that there was never a conversation after that moment. Similarly, Yoffit was offended that and thought of it sort of racist that Lamar was maybe going to be or speciesist, I guess, was going to be ascended over him, and then they never let that resolve with Yoffit. Like, if they had taken that moment and Yoffit had been like, I would have never stood up for Lamar, you know what I mean? Like, if that was Lamar's idea, I definitely would not have stand up. Maybe I'm not ready for command. Maybe he is. Like, maybe they have that conversation, and this episode might have functioned better for me, but they never did, and they never took those home, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you, and especially because, as you said, I mean, they started off with this joke about Yoffit that I agree was funny, but also, it's this frustration I'm having in general with the character of Yoffit. Like, first of all, the way he treats others, especially women, is obviously incredibly problematic, and we've talked about that. But also, to me, the importance of a show like Star Trek or like Orville, it's kind of interesting Freudian slip there, is that part of what it's trying to get us to do is to say, what happens when this completely new form of human life comes about and it's different and it seems weird to us and it seems funny to us and so we're going to mock it, but actually we realize we shouldn't. We should take it seriously and respect it and you know, adjust our worldview accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Yoffit, they're still just keeping as the butt of the joke. And I feel like to have that would be bad enough, but to have that but then show the character being actually viscerally offended – and I think making a good point about the I don't think Yoffit is correct that he is being passed over because they don't want gelatinous life in leadership.
Right.
But I think the sort of the microaggressions that he's endured and the reason he perceives that, I think, is completely legitimate.
I do too. It almost made me feel like Yoffit is eventually going to turn into a bad guy.
Yeah, which I would hate to see.
I don't know. I'd kind of like it because at least it would have consequences.
That's fair.
For all the stuff they've been doing. Maybe he starts to take a dark turn at some point because they've kind of have treated him like shit up until now. And up until this, they passing him over for promotion for not good reasons.
I could see that. But either way, it made me feel like for Lamar to pull this joke on Yoffit and then in the same episode for him to be specifically promoted to a job that Yoffit was in line for just felt so wrong.
I agree.
And I was thinking kind of similar. I love the point you made about Lamar winding up working under Yoffit. Like, to me, the way I would have loved to see this episode resolve is where, like, you know, Yoffit is in charge of the team, but Lamar is the one who comes up with the really important insights that helps things. And as well as kind of has a heart-to-heart with Yaphet about the two of them kind of recognize that they're not respecting each other. And at the end of it, Yaphet says, listen, I will happily accept being, you know, head of engineering, but I want Lamar as, like, the guy that I'm going to rely on because I recognize that he is smarter than I am when it comes to engineering, you know? And that they kind of recognize, like, Yaphet can train him in a lot of things. Not that I think Yaphet is a great leader either. But,
right.
But, you know, that they can, like, they can work under each other. And Lamar can sort of have his intelligence recognized. Because, again, it goes back to that thing of intelligence and wisdom. You know, I think if the idea is Lamar saying, I know that I'm smart enough that I could be a good leader if I learned all these other things. So now I want to let my intelligence show and also try to learn all these other things. Like, great. That would be such a much better way to have it go forward.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. You want to dive into talking about Ed's situation a little bit?
Yeah, let's go for it. I think what you said about the toxic self-reliance is exactly true.
Yeah.
And this storyline, I felt like they got perfectly. I remember I cringed a little bit at first because I thought they were maybe trying to have us sympathize with Ed. And when I realized they weren't doing that, I was so on board with it. And I thought, one thing I like, I think we've talked about before, is how this show can be subtle. And I thought, to me, my favorite moment in the show, and it's kind of a blink and you miss it thing because they never explicitly go back to it, but I think it's so telling, is an essential part of what's happening with Ed is it's not that he's upset that someone helped him. He's upset that a woman in his life helped him, and a woman who he used to be romantically involved with. And to me, the moment that really comes about is when Kelly says, well, but wait a minute, what I did for you, isn't that the exact same thing that you did for Malloy? And Ed's only response is to take some other word she used in the sentence about him being like a garbage fire or something and get offended by that, because he literally has no response, because she's exactly right. And so, yeah, I love that moment. And I love the way it resolved, because I think it really was about him recognizing this idea that he never wants to get by without the help of others, and that if he thinks someone else helped him, he now has to go pout and worry and doubt himself, to the point of, as you said, putting his entire crew in grave danger because he wants to be the pilot. I really liked how they pointed out just how wrong he is.
I liked that too, and I think there's even something to be said for exactly it being a very realistic way to resolve it. The fact that he just needed time is really what it was. He needed time to think about it. But I kind of wish that the climax of the show had somehow tied in to his need for others.
Yeah.
Like his reliance on Kelly or his reliance on anyone. I wish there'd been something in that, because it kind of felt like he went on that mission. He said, I've got to do this. And it was like him having to prove himself to himself, which is understandable, and it's very human reaction, and it's very, but it is, again, it's toxic self-reliance to the point that, you know, I don't know that he exactly put the crew at any more danger, but like you're talking about a pilot, you probably should put, Malloy in that role. He's the best pilot. He's one of the best pilots in the fleet.
Yeah.
But he had to do it himself just to prove it to himself that he wasn't, that he deserved his position. And it just didn't really do that. It didn't prove that to him, but it also, I don't see why it made that turn in him, where he realized, how much of an ass he was being, basically. I didn't connect the climax with what was going on. And I don't have a great rewrite for that, but I just kind of wish they'd written it in a way where like something happened in that final climax where he has to realize that he can't do this himself. He has to rely on someone else.
In some ways, that story was so fundamental to his and Kelly's character growth. I kind of feel like that should have been an A plot, you know, instead of, and to some extent, this story kind of tried to have two A plots.
Yeah. There's not really a primary.
I think both suffered because of it. Cause I think both his story and Lamar's story would have been better having more time to be fleshed out.
You know what they should have done? I got it. I got the rewrite.
Go for it.
Malloy, in his role as, you know, commander of this moment or whatever, he's commanding this investigation and this plan to save the ship. If he takes extra steps to be reliant on his crew that Ed would not take. And yeah. Ed sees Lamar do that and goes, I both see how good of a commander Lamar is, and maybe that makes the Lamar storyline make more sense. And he realizes he has flaws in his own command structure, because he would have never relied on Yafit. Maybe Yafit is extra, loud about how much he doesn't like Lamar in command. And yeah. then Lamar, in turn, relies on Yafit in a way that, that shows his command ability, and then shows Ed his weakness. And I think that could have tied it together. There you go. There's our rewrite.
I think that would get most of it. I do think that gender, even though they never actually explicitly comment on it, is a very important part of what's going on. And Agreed. So to some extent, I feel like it would have to be something about Mercer relying on well, but it's actually funny because, and here I feel like it's inconsistent, because maybe it's specific to the relationship he has with Kelly. Because he has no problem constantly acknowledging that Alara is much stronger than he is.
Yeah. It comes down to where your pride lies. So for Ed, yeah. his pride is not in his physical strength. His yeah. pride is in his command ability. And he thinks he's gotten this ship on his own accord. And he's finally doing the thing that he was meant for. And he's a commander. He's a captain of a ship. That's what he, like, all of his pride and all of his self-value is in. So when he finds out he got it through, other means, sort of nepotism means, it hurts his pride. And,
yeah,
not even, I kind of understand it. I've been really thinking a lot about, in my own life, here we go, turn into my own therapy for this episode. I've really been thinking a lot about my willingness to be wrong and how important that is, and willingness to not be the smartest person in the room, and willingness to just say you're sorry when you've done something bad and not kind of double down. We have this really toxic tendency in our makeups, and I don't know if it's an American thing or if it's just a human thing or if it is male sort of in its prevalence, but we have this thing where if we were wrong in the past, like if I've changed my mind about something over the years, it's really hard to tell someone, oh, I've changed my mind about that thing I was very sure about before.
Yeah.
Even though that is a huge part of growth, and it is growth, it's really hard to talk about, hey, yeah, I just don't believe that thing that I fought for before.
Yeah.
It's really hard to acknowledge that in ourselves. And I don't know, this sort of toxic self-reliance, as I keep calling it, TM, is kind of inherent to that. And it's
yeah.
him acknowledging that he needs help is sort of the same thing as, the things that I've been going through, trying to acknowledge that I also need help and I need growth, and I'm not, we all want to kind of think of ourselves as the hero, and the hero mm-hmm. is always sort of this perfect being, at least in a lot of stories. And so we have yeah. just this storyline that we build up around ourselves that we're the ones who've been fighting the good fight all along, and we're trying to move further and further. And I will do intellectual acrobatics to try to understand why when I was before fighting for this thing or believing this thing, I was right because of this. But as things have changed, there's all this stuff, but it's like, no, you can just be wrong. You can just say yeah. you're wrong. Like, it's okay to just say you're wrong or you did something shitty or whatever. So many people won't admit when they're morally wrong, when they do something morally right. wrong. It's really hard to be like, I'm sorry. That was really bad. I did a bad thing, and I, it's mm-hmm. yeah. Anyway, I like that this episode for that.
I think you're hitting on a lot of great points there. I mean, first, just on sort of the changing your mind thing. This is a political point, but not partisan. But it reminds me of that. There's a great meme I saw that was talking about how in politics today, one of the worst things that a politician can do is to flip flop. Which means to have one position and then later have another one.
Right.
And this meme was saying like, why are we saying it's a bad idea for someone to learn, for someone to grow, for someone to say, 10 years ago, I didn't know the things I know today, and so now I support a different position?
Yeah.
And in terms of the toxic masculine stuff, especially I think what you're really keying into here is this isn't just the Orville. This is a big trope in so many of our stories. Becky Allen is someone who's been a guest a couple of times. Becca Allen's been a guest a couple of times on my Superhero Ethics podcast. And the last time she was on, we had her talking about the Star Trek movies. And one thing she pointed out that I really liked is that one thing this newer set of movies is doing is that all of the original movies and most of the prequels, like most science fiction or hero or adventure stories, are kind of based on like the one great man of history idea, which is just, you know, that like one person, if they rely on themselves and they do the great things, they can be the hero, they can change everything. And that the more recent Star Wars movies have been much more community focused. You know, it's much more about how can all of this group of people, Rey and Finn and Poe, thank you, yeah. And Leia and all the others, and the Admiral who destroys the ship in the most recent movie, whose name I'm also Hoda. Something like that. Yeah, but an amazing, like, that they all need each other and they all rely on each other, because I think it is a trope that bothers me so much. And when I think about that, to me, the first thing that comes to mind when I think about that, the hero has to rely on themselves, even if they're putting themselves in danger, is when our hero, like, faces down against the bad guy, and five of his friends are there, and frankly, the five of them together could easily defeat the bad guy.
Right.
But the hero says, I have to do this myself.
I have to do this alone. This is something I have to do. And that's something you have to do to fulfill your own pride, and you're doing it at the...
You're endangering everyone else.
But yes, you're endangering everyone else.
Like, to me, I love the show Firefly so much. And one of my favorite moments in that is when he is fighting... I think the guy's name is Crow. He's the huge bouncer for Niska, one of my favorite characters in that show. And there's a moment when he's engaged in this like life or death wrestling match and fighting with that guy on the edge of some precipice. And someone tries to help, and I think it's Jane who goes, no, the captain's got to do this by himself. and the captain's like, nope, I don't need that. Come help me. And they all just shoot the guy, and he dies.
He's like,
and that was such a good moment.
It's so great. It's so wonderful. I love that show. That show is the best.
They don't shoot him and he die. I think they overpower him, and then later he gets like kicked into the engine of a plane. But that's a whole other story entirely. But yeah, that to me was such a good moment of Mal, who is in many ways a very man's man kind of character, just not giving a shit and saying, nope, I'll take the help. I don't need to do this myself.
Yeah. Malcolm is such an interesting character because he's at once the rebel who's fighting the Galactic Order. Joss Whedon, who is very liberal in his politics, said once that he loves writing Mal, but he thinks he would hate Mal in real life. He would just not agree with him on anything. because I think that he is very much, he's basically a South Will Rise Again guy, you know, in if you're looking at it on like a global scale, but on those smaller levels, he's not that toxically masculine, you know, he has those moments that are so like, giving and willing to accept help. I love that character.
I mean, he's very much the Han Solo, not the Luke Skywalker, you know, in that his immediate reaction to seeing evil in the world, in the big bad corporations and the Alliance, is not to say, how do I get people to fight it? It's, how do I get away from it enough that it doesn't affect me? And I think the story of the entire show and some of the movie, and would have loved to see in later episodes, is him kind of having the Han Solo turn of saying, no, it's not enough for me to just get away from this. I need to fight this, which he really does in the movie.
Yeah, that's the movie. But not to dig too deep on Firefly, but the whole point of the show is from the beginning to end, the very first scene of the show is him doing that, like wanting to change. He's fighting the battle of Serenity Valley and he loses. And it's that heartbreak and him sort of having to over time come back to that guy who's willing to fight the evil, you know, it's him being on the edge and like his world, who he's willing to fight for. They talk about this in some of the commentaries, who he's willing to fight for becomes smaller and smaller as the show goes on. And in the movie, they're in a really dark place because they haven't been able to pull off a job in a while. And then he kicks River and Simon off the ship and he says, "You're not part of my crew anyway." And it's like, as he gets more and more desperate and as he loses more and more things, who his family is becomes smaller and smaller. And then finally he sees an evil so dark that he has to make it, you know. That's such a good show. God, let's do a podcast about it. No, it's not. Let's do a podcast about the Orville.
How about we finish the Orville, and then when the Orville is done, we'll go back and do one on Firefly? Because I think we'd have some great discussions, especially because I agree with you that a lot of Joss Whedon's politics are very liberal. I think his politics on women are pretty bad, and a lot of that comes off in his shows, but that's a whole other issue to talk about. But
just to give him a little defense there, I think you're right. But again, it's that whole growing thing. And for the 90s, when he was making those shows, his shows were some of the most progressive shows in many ways.
And then, honestly, if it wasn't for the second Avengers movie, I would be much more forgiving of him.
But to me, in the Avengers movie,
the continued sexism that he shows makes it a lot harder for me to feel like there's been any growth. But again, hey, listeners, if you ever want to hear this happen, the more you support our shows, the more you listen to our shows, the more you pass these shows around and get more people to listen, the more Matt and I can quit all those dumb jobs and just do podcasting. So if you want to hear Firefly, listen to our show more and pass it on to other people. Blatant self-promotion, but there you go.
Share this with people. Eventually there'll be other ways to support, I'm sure. We'll make a shirt or something. We appreciate everybody who's listening because I just love doing this. I love diving in deep on these shows. And every time I do get started talking about something like Firefly, I'm like, I would love to talk about that for 16 hours or whatever.
I admit one of the reasons why I love it is, for me, I have a lot of feelings about what I watch and when I watch it because I spend a lot of time working at home, and I'm someone who grew up in a house in a small apartment where the TV was always on. I'm able to get a lot of work done while the TV's on, but still I feel like I want to be doing something productive with what I'm watching. And so I often have trouble letting myself go back to rewatch a show unless I have a good reason. Like Parks and Rec is about to go off Netflix, so I'm binging that. But I think as much as I love The Orville, I'm not sure I would have been able to justify to myself going back and rewatching it unless we had this podcast. And I'm loving the opportunity to do that. And to our listeners, some of you may have watched The Orville before and are just enjoying hearing what we have to say about it, and you remember the episodes. Some of you are watching it for the first time. But especially, I would love to know if any of you have decided to rewatch The Orville because of what we're doing and because you're enjoying kind of refollowing it along. And if that's the case for you, please write in and let us know. And Matt will tell you at the end of the show how to do that, because I am just really loving – it's a show that I find watching again. I pick up on things I missed, some good, some bad. I'm really getting so much out of this experience.
Right, and not to mention intentionally having a 30-minute to an hour conversation about every episode really lets you kind of dig down on what's going on. You know, I feel like these shows like Star Trek The Next Generation, which I sat down and watched two episodes of this week, which I haven't watched in a long time. I could sit, and these can just be bite-sized little things that go in one ear and out the other, but taking the time to sit and talk about them really, really does help my experience, and I really hope it helps the listeners enjoy these shows even more. And I'm really excited to get to new episodes, which for The Orville won't be till like December of next year. I really look forward to that because it will be interesting to see other people watching these episodes and commenting on them before we even get a chance, and getting other people in on the conversation. So that being said, if you want to do that, we're going to be covering episode 11 next week. So go watch it. Send us some feedback. We'd love to hear what everybody else is thinking about these episodes and, you know, things we're missing, because there's clearly things we're going to miss that may be important to all of you, and we'd love to talk about them. The only last thing I had about this episode that I hadn't mentioned, it's actually part of Lamar's storyline. So I probably should have mentioned it a long time ago when we were kind of discussing that. But I hate to be this guy, because this is not... But I found it problematic. The idea... They have this discussion about society and how some people basically, Lamar is a man who's choosing not to work hard. He just wants to have a beer and go home. And it kind of smacked of the idea of the welfare queen.
Yeah,
and having
that if we don't have capitalism, we don't have ways to motivate people and all that.
Right, and I actually don't disagree with that. I think that people in general, that's why I'm more of a capitalist than you are, for sure. And I do believe that capitalism has a place, because I think that, like, motivating people takes something. And I'm cool having that conversation, but having it be a white woman telling a black man he needs to get off his ass in his socialist society felt a little uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even see that, but I think that's a good point.
Could have been another black character telling him that. It could have been a white character who's going through this problem. Like, that would have made me feel a little better about it. Just the choice to make it a white person telling a black person that given the socialist safety net they've created, he isn't pulling his weight, felt a little bit problematic, right, and maybe just not paying attention to what they're doing.
Well, and especially because, and I will say, you earlier said that we have a conversation that's intentional 30 minutes to 60 minutes. We've not always kept that. Kept to that, and it's often when we discuss capitalism versus socialism. So I'm going to be very careful not to get us too far into the weeds of that.
Sure.
But I want to say something that is mostly agreeing with you, but from a more pro-socialist perspective. Because I definitely had that same feeling, but to me it's more about, I don't think that he, I think actually he's a great example of that you don't need capitalism to motivate you, that what capitalism does is to over-motivate you. Because to me, I think he is pulling his weight. He is clearly doing a good job doing what he does on the bridge. You know,
sure.
I think his job has never been fully explained as to how, but it's kind of like there was always a navigator and a pilot. You never quite understand what exactly how it's broken down, but clearly he's doing a good job. And to me, I always thought one of the worst parts of capitalism is the idea of the rat race, that you always have to do more, that you always have to do better, that you always have to be bigger and better and faster and make more money and produce more. And that's kind of what I was saying at the very beginning, that to me, one of the best things in a socialist society, I think, would be that the person who wants to just go to work, do a job, do what they have to be a part of society, and then come home and watch TV and drink beer or do what they want, there's nothing wrong with that. Because to me, I think that's still very different from the idea of the person who doesn't want to work, wants to just live off of the government support, and wants to literally be lazy all day. Like, Lamar's not doing that. Lamar gets up and does his job. He's not a very responsible crewman, and that has to stop. And so in the end, I come to the same place as you, that for him to have found comfort, you know, not just being the lazy person who just takes, you know, government support and doesn't do anything with it, which I will say, as a disabled person on government support, I have my own strong feelings, because I think the idea that happens at all is pretty much a myth. But even if you want to say that does happen a good deal, to me that's clearly not Lamar. Lamar does his job. He does it well. He's too much of a frat boy, and he's not a good crew member, but he does his job, and he doesn't want to do any more than that.
Yeah.
And that's where I agree with you, that for him to be shamed for feeling that way, I think is wrong. And you're right, I think there's an interesting racial component to when it's the white person doing that to him that again feels kind of off.
Yeah. So I agree, there's nothing wrong with a person desiring to do a job, do it well, go home, drink a beer. That's their life. That's fine.
Yeah.
I do think there is a element to be discussed about wasted potential. And obviously that's what they're trying to do here. I just think they do it in a few sort of ham-fisted ways.
Right.
They maybe needed to inspire him to kind of counteract his youth, where he was
right,
sort of deprogrammed to be inspired. Like, they needed to inspire him, not sort of force him into the situation, maybe. I don't know. But I do think there is something to be said for our society functions best if everyone is doing... It's not necessarily morally wrong for someone to do a low amount of work or a simple job or whatever. There's nothing morally wrong with it, but there is a sort of wasted potential to our society that should be. We need ways to motivate people.
I'm trying to figure out how to respond to that without going into another hour long conversation.
Totally understand.
Very much disagree. But maybe just to keep it to the Orville, I would say to me, I think the waste of potential comes under capitalism, where the only proper way to use your potential is to go deeper into the workforce and to push yourself further and to do more. And I think so much potential is wasted because how many artists don't get to create art because they have to work 80 hours a week? How many great thinkers never get to sit down and write books of philosophy because they're always told, no, that's lazy. You're doing your own thing. I would have, you know, to me, a great resolution to this story would have been if he'd said, nah, I don't want to be a chief engineer. I don't want to work harder. But I loved getting to really explore the crazy physics of two-dimensional space. So I'm going to start a social physics club on the ship for people to get together and have a beer or have a non-alcoholic drink and talk about theoretical physics.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use my intelligence that way to benefit people that has nothing to do with the workplace and nothing to do with adding to the quality of the ship in a direct way, but it's just using my potential. Like, to me, that's what I would have loved.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that at all. I think that, like, finding some way, just the thing, and I don't necessarily mean capitalism is the only way to do that. I just think you do need mechanisms to inspire and mechanisms to intentionally cause people to, reach their full potential. Now, I don't think that capitalism is always the right thing to do that, and I don't think that, like, because often it does just make people seek money instead of, you know, the betterment of our society. So if what we're trying for is the betterment of our society, it's not always the way. It does prevent, like, we've talked a lot about this, and I don't think there's a racial component to it at all. But I do think there's something we just need to figure out that mechanism. There's something that capitalism does, and I was talking about it with somebody earlier this week, and they were like, "People will work. People will work because it's in our design to work. Like it's what we do. We want to fulfill. We want to have, you know, fulfilling things in our lives." And I was like, "We want achievement, but like the amount that I will play a video game 30 hours a week if I don't have to get up and make money." Like, that's a problem. Like, and we've gotten so good at designing video games and things like it and social media and stuff that, like, we need, if we're going to go to more of like a Star Trek society, Orville society, where this entire, we need some mechanisms to inspire people to work at all and work towards the common good.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm really glad you're watching all of Next Generation again, because I think, for me, one of the overall messages about Next Generation is that you're completely wrong. I don't mean that in an insulting way, because I think, to me, one of the fundamental points of that story is that I feel like, and there have been psychological studies about this, one of the reasons why people will lose themselves in 30 hours of video, and I don't think that's, like, I had a happy weekend recently with my partner where we did nothing but play video games, and it felt self-indulgent, and I felt guilty about it, and I had to fight that and tell myself, no, I'm allowed to do this. But the reason why some people will, as you say, kind of maybe lose themselves in that is often because they feel like the things they are supposed to do, that being productive, feels so worthless to them. It feels like just being a corporate drone and not getting anything done of any value, just doing what someone else tells you.
Right.
And for me, the fundamental story of Next Generation is them saying, once we broke that model, once we said we no longer need people to make choices based on economic necessity, but they really can just do whatever their potential is, that society is so much richer. It's so much better because we utterly remove the financial incentive to do things.
Right.
I fundamentally believe that. I fundamentally believe that it is capitalism itself that inspires the laziness and the dejection and the social rejection and the desire to check out of society that later people claim capitalism has created a problem that people then say we need capitalism to fix.
I don't see. I think the real message. I literally watched an episode yesterday of Star Trek where they talked about this. They say that the thing that allowed that to happen is matter synthesis. Actually, that was the Orville. They said that in the Orville this episode.
Yeah.
But they do. They also talk about that on Star Trek. The fact that you can create matter from nothing allows them to do that and allows people to do that. So. It's that technological innovation that allows that society to exist. So I don't know that, like, you can make a one-to-one comparison of saying, that's how Star Trek exists. It's great. Yeah, if we can come up with
I mean, we do have the technology in our world. World hunger does not have to exist.
Oh, agreed.
Like, we have the technology in this world to feed every person who needs to be fed, to house every person who needs to be fed, to clothe every person who has. We just don't have the political will to do it. I'll just say this last thing, and then maybe we should have me on as a guest for the Star Trek podcast. You and Dave, too. We can have a whole discussion about Star Trek economics and socialism and capitalism. But the last thing I'll just say is, like, in the last week of when at least you and I are recording this, we have seen a 16-year-old girl be incredibly motivated and incredibly driven and use her talents and her potential at the age of 16 to do more to address the global climate crisis than any American teenager I've ever seen. And she certainly did not grow up in a capital. I mean, she grew up in a very socialist society. So it's just one example. It's an anecdote thing, but I just kind of want to end on that of, like, I think there's ways to still get people to their best potential without needing that financial incentive to drive them.
I totally don't disagree. I think there has to be ways, and I think there are ways. We kind of need to learn what they are. And we're working on it. We're learning all those, like, nudge economics, you know, about all that stuff. Anyway, like how to motivate society through small changes in motivation or whatever. I don't know. It's really interesting. And if we move to more systems like this, like how I'm interested to see, and these shows can explore that. And I love that.
And I'll admit, here's the great irony. I have asked people before, and I'll ask people again, support what we're doing so that Matt and I have enough money to talk about how you don't need money to do the things you love.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, I think this is a good wrapping up point. Did you have any kind of last things you wanted to say about this episode?
I do not. I liked the joke where Isaac was petting Malloy.
And said, yes. Oh, that was such a good moment.
Are we bonding? They talk about the pets. They talk about how pets, you pet them and you bond with them. That's why you need a cat on the bridge. And then Isaac just walks over and starts petting Malloy and says, are we bonding?
Yeah.
And Malloy looks really creeped out. Super funny.
And it reminded me of the very first episode where, or no, the second episode where they find the culture that keeps humans in a zoo. Because it's a nice point about, like, how do we treat animals? We see cats and dogs as wonderful beings, but as kind of lesser than us, and we enslave them for our will. And we help them a lot. We think it's good for them, but certainly they have no means to consent. They pretty much consent in that, but, like, you can say there's a kind of Stockholm syndrome that happens. But so I love the idea of, but we think of ourselves as fundamentally different than cats and dogs, and I don't disagree necessarily. But I love the idea of that the way we see cats and dogs, Isaac would see humans, and other races would see humans. And what's the moral significance of that? That was such a great little moment that was both really insightful, but also really funny.
Yeah, really good. Really good. All right, guys. Well, thanks so much. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Orville Universe podcast. Peace.
And just remember, in space, don't feed your coworkers to other coworkers.
Thanks for listening to the Orville Universe podcast. If you'd like to hear more from Matthew Westfox, search your podcatcher now for the Superhero Ethics podcast. If you'd like to hear more from me, Matthew Carroll, search your podcatcher for the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast and the Star Trek Universe podcast. Or you can check out my music. Just search for Matthew Carroll wherever you listen to music.